And welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin Walter, the host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. We're always involved in the purchase and sale of all forms of precious metals, rare coins, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds. People always ask what scrap gold is. Scrap gold just is a mean name for something you don't want anymore. It's still gold. It's good gold. It can be old jewelry that you have sitting in a drawer or, you know, stuff like that we've all got, and it just sits there, and you're like, why do I have that? It's one thing if it's your wedding band from 20 years ago or 30 or 40 or whatever. It depends how old you are. Hopefully it's from 50 years ago. I don't know. But that's one thing you probably don't want to sell. But, you know, if you got a lot of stuff, it's just not a lot, but even any, it just sits there. There's no point in having it. If you think of it as a gold investment, trade it for a gold investment. Trade it for an item that you know what you have. People, you know, you hear me say gold bullion. I've explained this on the show, and it's really weird. I get people that say they listen to the show, and they will literally come in and repeat things or say things that I've covered on the show over and over. Gold bullion, when we use the term bullion, it just means that it's worth its value in precious metals. It doesn't mean that it's some weird little cube like chicken broth bullion, okay? That's even spelled differently. Bullion, gold bullion is B-O-U, I think, and then, or B-U, and the broth is B-O-U. But the thing is, it's just, bullion's bullion. So people will come in and say, I don't want coins. I want bullion. And it's like, coins are bullion. It doesn't matter what shape they're stamped into. If you're buying it for the gold or the silver, it's bullion essentially. Now, when you buy items, when I talk about building portfolios, the important thing is, I mean, you get all kinds of misnomers. The biggest issue I have right now is that people don't realize that absolutely every single thing you read online is paid for. This is the new Google. This is Google that controls every letter of every word and every hit on every page and every ad in every corner. And I mean, folks, it's bad. There are so many articles that I used to do shows off of. There were so many websites. They are gone. I mean, I am so frustrated because there were certain things I could search and find. Well, they're gone. I didn't write down the website name, and Google won't let me have them because they're not paying big bucks. So if I am in this business and I'm trying to locate information that I know is valuable and Google's hiding it from me, you certainly have to understand that if you think that you're doing research, you're not. Don't think because you go and people say, oh, the American Silver Eagle is the best silver investment of all, and you're paying 20% over or 25% over the silver content, and then you read, but the reason you pay so much over the face value, over the silver value, is because it has a face value. It's got a face value of $1. $1. And you're paying 25, even 30%. Well, probably closer, 20 to 25% over the silver content. That means that if you buy $10,000 worth of Silver Eagles, you're only getting $7,500 worth of silver. That's not a very good deal. And so those are the things, but there's people marketing them out there. Why do you suppose? Maybe they're making a bigger profit. Maybe people are profit motivated, and when you come in and you think that you've done research and you're making these wonderful decisions, maybe you're just falling into the prey of the profiteer. And that's what we don't want you to do. You might listen and go, well, that doesn't make Kevin. I thought you'd want. Makes sense, Kevin. I think you'd want profit. I want profit, but I operate at wholesale levels with the public. I mean, there's definitely profit in what we do, but We don't have any commission salespeople. No one here has ever had a pay structure that has any relevance to maximizing profit on a customer. Their pay is based on, you know, hard work and how the group does, the team does, and all that. But it's never individual. It's never like, hey, if you make more money on Mrs. Smith, you know, you can have extra money. Everybody else out there does. When you see commercials for Roslyn Capital and Goldline and Monex or whoever, you call these places, you know, when you get William Devaney, that's like, I buy my gold from Roslyn Capital. It's right on the money every time and all whatever he says. It's just you call there and he's like, the best price on gold. It's like not the best price. It's the highest price. It's ridiculous. You know, they even do, folks, we've called. This is terrible. They will literally quote you a price. And then when they go to finalize the deal, they'll quote a price to basically bait you. So let's say right now, hypothetically, you wanted a 1 ounce American Gold Eagle. Real quick education. There's what we call a premium and a margin. Okay. The premium is the price over gold you pay. The margin is our profit. So basically on an American Gold Eagle, we buy, we're buying them today for spot plus 2% and selling them for spot plus 5 in small quantities. Okay. So the sell price is spot plus 5. So which if, you know, hypothetically, if gold's 1300, 5%, $65. So at a $1,300 gold, it'd be 1365. If you call the place like that, like Roslyn, what they'll do is they'll say, if you say, what are your gold eagles? They'll say, oh, like 1400, whatever. They're higher. But then what happens is then when, if you say, okay, well, I'll take some of those. Okay, well, they're such and such at 1400. And then we'll add on our, and then they'll say, well, you know, we'll add on our 6%, you know, we've got our 6% profit in there. And you're like, mm-hmm, yeah, you know, that's fine. But you don't realize that they quoted you a price that you could buy them here for, and then they add on another 6%. And then they say, well, we've got to order them, and we've got to add our profit. And I mean, I've been through this stuff with them on the phone, never letting them know who I am. It's just where I'm going with this. Two ways to look at it. It's kind of like two ways to look at Trump, right? You can either look at it as I'm saying, you know, only do business with me because I'm better and we're more fair. And that's true. But the truth of it is I'm trying to educate you to protect yourself and be a wise investor. Or if you're a fear runner, you're like, oh my gosh, that's too confusing. I'll run away. Now, I don't think that's what the Bible even begins to tell us. We got to be wise. We got to be brave, right? Just remember, folks, courage is not an absence of fear. Not that buying gold's courage, but the point is people who are afraid and run away if it seems complicated or, you know, or too much work, just look around at your life. If you avoid things that seem a little too tough or a little too challenging, I already know what your life is like. You definitely haven't maximized the talents that God gave you, and that's not a good thing. God has high hopes for you. You think of our love for our children, okay? Now, our children are going to screw up, and but you watch them and you love them and you care about them and you want them to do well. Don't you really want your kids to do great? Do you say, you know, my kids are believers, and what's most important to me is that they keep themselves at the absolute bare minimum. I don't want them to ever strive for more. I don't want them to ever strive to be great. I just want them to be content in the Lord, okay? Well, you don't have to destroy your life to be content in the Lord. You don't have to minimize yourself to be content in the Lord. Well, that's a wordplay there. There's a level of minimization, you follow me, but you can be content. You're most content in the Lord when you are operating in the talent pool he gave you. We've discussed the parable of talents. Folks, what's really interesting with the parable of talents is where Jesus tells the story of the, you know, the five, the two, the one. The guy with the one talent, he says he gives to each according to his ability, right? You may or may not have ever noticed what happens to the guy with the one talent. Now, if you really think about this, there is meaning to that. I want you to think of, say, Michael Jackson or O.J. Simpson or, you know, whoever's next. These people have a talent, okay? They have something phenomenal. Michael Jackson's life fell apart. People say, oh, he wasn't a believer. The guy was a Jehovah's Witness, right? Artists have a different spin on a different view on life and all that. But that one talent ultimately destroyed him. He capitalized on it. He created a new genre of music, modern pop or whatever it is. And his whole life came crumbled, right? I mean, that's the one talent. I had an employee here who was so talented in coins. He was literally, he had Asperger's, I think. I'm 95% sure. And he that was his talent. And then he let it get the best of him. He got greedy and stole and all this stuff, and he ruined his life. Now he sells cars, you know, and he was doing very well. But that one talent can be a curse, because one thing they say in business, and I spent years as a banker looking at people's lives, finances, money, and the number one thing that can destroy somebody is success. It's the same as gambling, right? You go, you sit down to gamble. You've never gambled before. You sit down at a table to play blackjack or whatever it is, and you win and win and win. And you walk away making a ton of money. And that was so easy and so awesome. And what a rush. And man, that's not hard at all. And now you're hooked, right? And you think you're invincible. That's the same thing that can happen to the guy with the one talent. The guy with the one talent appears often to really have an overamplification of that talent. It may be because it would be just like being a person with one sense. Like if you didn't have, you know, smell or hearing or whatever, and all you have is sight, or vice versa, you have none of your senses and all you have is hearing, your hearing is going to become incredibly amplified. If you just have one talent, I assume that, you know, there's a possibility that can become severely overamplified. And there is an ash heap of examples in this world of people who had one phenomenal talent. So, you know, don't just be aware of that, I guess, that, you know, you can let that arrogance get a little bit too far. It's interesting that the guy with the one talent where I was going ends up in hell. I just don't get it. I mean, it's God. You know, he says to one, he gave five, to another two, to another one, each according to his own ability. And he went on his journey. Now, this is what blows my mind. Okay. So when did God give us the talent? When does God give you your talents? We don't know. Do they come at birth? Do they come later? I don't know, but here's what's interesting. God says each to his own ability. If God assigns your talents before you're born, he knows your exact ability. So it's weird, because wouldn't you think God gave you your ability too? So does he give you your ability and then assign talents based on your ability? It's you can get into some interesting philosophical circular confusion on some of this stuff. That one stumps me a little bit. Because I really think that we are each born the way God wants us to be. We've got a destiny. It's so important that we capitalize on that. And I don't care if you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. If you haven't pursued your talents, go for it. People have all these dumb things they say to find out what you should do for a career. I've heard this one. Whatever you love to do when you were 5 years old, or 10 years old, that's what you need to do for a career. Well, when I was 10 years old, I loved riding bikes. So I think I should probably ride a bike for a living, you know, or it just doesn't make sense, right? Your talents are going to manifest themselves in different ways throughout your life. But what's important is you have a skill set. Each one of us has a skill set that would be best utilized in certain areas. Now, if that, I'm not telling you it's going to fall in your lap. That's the other misnomer with God. He tells us to pray and pray and pray. We even have the sermon of the widow and the judge, where God says, tells us the story that this lady wouldn't quit. Day in, day out, probably month in, month out, who knows how long. She showed up in this judge's court every single day and said, give me justice against this man. Give me justice against this man. Finally, that said the judge who did not respect people or love God just gave in. He said, fine, this lady's going to drive me nuts. She's never going to go away. I'm going to just answer her plea. Jesus tells us that God's the same way. He says in this parable, he calls it a parable of how to pray. That's not what they wrote in the Bible. He said that. He said, I will teach you how to pray. And then he says, now that you know this secret, the secret is if you pursue God relentlessly, he hears you. Now, you have to be in his will, don't you? I mean, we can't pray for things that are outside of his will. There's a possibility maybe that he can change our hearts so that our will comes closer to his or whatever. But the point is, God says, just pursue relentlessly to get heard. I didn't make up the rules. That's what he says. So if you have a set of talents and abilities that you aren't being utilized, you need to get on your knees every day and you need to pray and pray and pray. And a lot of this, folks, comes down to work, jobs, right? I mean, isn't that what it boils down to? Is we all got a job on earth, right? I mean, we should. If you don't and you're not disabled, you need to go get one. Being unemployed isn't an option. God says clearly, if you're faithful with little, he'll give you much. If you're sitting around collecting unemployment, you're not being faithful with little. God wants you to work. Oh, I know. You can get more on unemployment than you can at this job or that job. In God's economy, that's not how it works. Okay? God doesn't say take the path of least resistance if it pays the most. That's not God's program. Okay? We don't do that. The right thing is often the most difficult thing. God wants you to work. He wants you to produce. He wants you to grow. There's a lot of growth when you have a job. There's all kinds of growth. You got to get up every day. You got to go to work. You got to deal with other people. That's sometimes the hardest part. You got to grow. You get mad at that guy at work, and he's mean, and they discriminate, and blah, 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 and you got to go strengthen yourself, and you got to get on your knees before God, and you got to get stronger, and you got to learn how to love. And you're sick someday, and you get up, and you go to work anyway. You don't want to be one of these guys that calls in sick all the time. You want to be up working. I mean, it's what God wants. Once you prove to God you can work at McDonald's, then he'll move you up. But again, you got to be praying relentlessly and you got to be trying your hardest. You got to be utilizing those talents that God gave you. You know, it's not uncommon. There's countless examples in the Bible where God pulls us through the valley, folks, before he can put us on the mountaintops. We have got to go through the dark times for God to form us, right? There's no question about it. None of us becomes the best us when everything goes our way. Just a fact. I think you'd all agree. So the point of this is, you know, you should be seeking God, drawing near to God, pursuing God all the time. But if you're out of a line, I mean, it's not that I'd say to pursue him less when things are right, but if you're out of a line, go. I mean, and all this stuff I did in my life, I don't want to say it, but too bad. But, you know, my wife and I were dirt poor. We were living in Section 8 housing. I never did collect one welfare check. I refused. I never took an earned income credit on my taxes. I refused. Looking back, sometimes I wish I would have, but I didn't. I just didn't. I just trusted the Lord, and the devil came after me for that. He came after me with every multi-level marketing abuse you can imagine, every bad job opportunity, everything. And I just kept saying, if God wants me to have it, I'm going to have it. And I feel that one day God blessed me, and I spent years in prayer, and I never quit. And my jobs, despite having you know, a boss that was literally addicted to pornography and strip clubs. And I used to have to travel with him, and we would have some pretty serious clashes because his nights were spent at strip clubs. And when we went to major, whatever you call them, trade shows in places like Vegas, he and the guys would go exactly that. It was all strip clubs. It was all this. It was all that. I wouldn't go. So I got, you know, punished. I got ostracized. I got the crappiest shifts at 6 a.m, setting up booths, taking down booths, you know, working at 10 at night when everybody was out having a nice dinner, because I wouldn't conform to his lifestyle. But in all honesty, God saw that and God honored that. And I really believe one day he blessed me very much. He gave me our business, and it's been a long road. We've had good times and bad times, and you know, things come and things go, and people have their times when you're looking at situations like, you know, the Dow just keeps roaring up and up and up and up. You know, what is absolutely ridiculous to me, folks, is the insincerity and untruthfulness of the Dow. That is what baffles me, okay? So, you know, we continue to live in a country with two different stories to tell. In one of the stories, we have a country with a very low unemployment rate and records in the stock market every other day, hypothetically. On the other story, we live in a place where 95,385,000 Americans are not in the labor force. So, by the way, a new record has been set, and that's the 95,385,000 Americans are not in the labor force. The army of non-working Americans keeps growing. So why do they keep telling us this stuff? 95 million of us are not in the labor force. This new record was reached in the latest set of data that was released by the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. It's a bigger issue than most would like, you know, than anyone's willing to admit. So you've got many older Americans that are drawing substantially from the government, and we now have this younger American population working on more low-wage positions than ever before. It was kind of like, I was joking with a coworker today about, you know, my generation believes you don't drink at work. Well, there was a situation we were familiar with where someone was drinking at work. So you get the millennial, they get confronted for drinking at work, and they get mad and quit their job because, by God, who is this employer to tell me I cannot drink at work? This is true, folks. I may be this old, you know, whatever, 50-year-old guy that, you know, I grew up in a different generation, but this is the new thought process. They say that the millennials, you know, they have the highest job quitting rate ever, and I had these statistics a while ago, but the number one reason that they were quitting their jobs most often, what the statistics were from was the average employment duration, okay, by generation. So the younger generation, the younger they got, the faster they turned through jobs. The number one reason for millennials to quit their job was because they were personally offended, meaning they had their feelings hurt, okay? As you got older, you know, in the older, like 40-plus-year-old generation, their number one complaint was that there wasn't enough loyalty from the employer because they were loyal to the employer. They wanted to be loyal. They wanted to be part of the team. They wanted to be part of the success. The younger generation is looking to be offended, and there's a scripture about that. We are not to be easily offended or to offend others. And as we all know, we watch the millennials, kind of offensive, huh? Okay, so we're saying this whole unemployment thing is a lot bigger issue than you're going to get anywhere. So you've got all these older Americans drawing from the government, and now we've got this younger American population that's working in these low-wage positions which is a new record that isn't obviously something to be proud of. So the number of Americans not in the labor force is really troubling when I dig into the data. Part of this is being governed by Americans that are retiring, but millions of these people are falling into this category for harder to characterize reasons, okay? So I'm looking at this chart. So from the current population we've had since 07, and we've had a heck of a climb. This statistical figure of the people not in the labor force has doubled in 10 years, almost doubled. It's gone from, well, not quite doubled. It's gone from 60 million to 95 million. So it's gone up about whatever that is, 60%. Okay. So the first thing I note is that since 07, it's really running up nonstop. It's an incredible number. And most of this increase during a time that we're supposed to be in a recovery. The data coincides with the reality that Americans are too broke to afford a home to purchase. Okay, it's important. That's another statistic that's out of control. Americans cannot afford homes either right now. So our wages are going down. And people are out of the workforce. We're being told that unemployment rates are dropping and that home ownership is rising. We don't have accurate assessments of those that are not in the labor force because you can game the unemployment rate by taking those people out. So when I'm looking at a chart, they've got all these different reasons to pull people out. You know, the ratio of unemployed to the labor force. They have all this stuff. So I'm trying to get down to the nitty gritty here. It makes sense that, you know, they take all these people out, basically, to just to simplify it, folks, gave up looking for work is a new category. Why? Here's why. Because when you are collecting unemployment, you have to supposedly be out applying for 5 jobs a week. We get people calling all the time. Do you got any jobs? No. Okay, thanks, bye. Then they put that down as one of their job applications. We've got these new statistics where people are giving up. It's hopeless. They know. When you get someone who's literally, what I don't get, folks, and I'm going to be honest with you, what are these people living on? I mean, and so then when I move on and I start to read, here's what it is. These people, the reason that they can say no longer looking for work is that under Obama, when these numbers rose rapidly, these people were able to transfer from unemployment to welfare. Okay, Obama opened up welfare for everyone. So what's happening is what used to be, man, I'm unemployed for a period of time, but I certainly don't qualify for welfare. Now it's, you used to have to go off of your unemployment, wait around, you know, for quite a while, 6 months to a year to show a full year of bad income, essentially, to qualify for welfare. Otherwise, they'd say just go on unemployment until you get another job. Obama changed that. You can be converted straight over from unemployment to welfare by choice. Now, the average, I mean, folks, just in living expense, if you are a single, or not a single parent, if you are a family of four, you get $2,738 a month tax-free income to live on, okay? $2,700 tax-free, I think we all know, is the equivalent of at least $3,500 taxable, right? We all know that. So that's, you know, 40-some thousand a year. That doesn't count free daycare. It doesn't count, you know, other stipends. You get housing allowance and all kinds of stuff. They can make a decent living. They say that a single mother can make as much in bigger cities as $80,000 a year. And I've actually seen on John Stossel on Fox, I've seen this. So the statistics, the numbers that they're putting out are just, they're astounding. The amount of wealth or income that they've provide for these people is it's hard to avoid. Now, that's what I was talking about earlier. Do you want to be blessed by God or do you want to subside? Which part of the fence do you think God wants you on? Granted, I understand you gotta feed your family and everything, but the fact of the matter is you can't ever stop trying and driving forward. You gotta give it your best shot. So we've got an ever retiring baby boomer movement. We've got a millennial movement that doesn't wanna make money per se. They don't wanna be successful. Like, you know, they all want the success, I guess, is a better way to put it. They just don't understand the price of success is hard work. God gave us a basic fundamental system that there is no real shortcut. You might want the shortcut. I think it's hard for the millennial generation because everything has an app. They want an app for everything. We've got the average American right now. Let me see. I got some interesting statistics here. Average Americans, what is this? Income distribution, blah, blah, blah. This is random. This is just me jumping. I saw some statistics here. Top third, top quarter. I'd have to read that. They have some top statistics here. Top 1% control 42% of the financial wealth in the U.S., And by the way, folks, we've talked here recently of the whole deception of our economic system, the Keynesian economics. A good friend of mine, well, my son, has been doing a lot of research on it lately, and he's like, Dad, this economic system is terrible. I said, it's not an economic system. He said, no, it's not. Keynesian economics, which is what our country runs on, is the opposite of economics. They say there's got to be an unlimited supply of cash and currency on hand. Well, guess what? That's not the way God ever made it. The way God made it is you have gold and silver. He's endorsed it. He's authorized it. And then that's true money. And then you back your currency with it. And it's going to fluctuate. One thing you got to realize a little bit with the movement in the metals is it's moving against other world currencies. Sometimes people get all freaked out by that, and they don't realize that their spending power of gold can rise. If the dollar strengthens and gold does not go down, on a day-by-day basis, you may not readily feel that or see it, but literally in weeks you will. You'll start to notice if the dollar strengthens, you'll see gas at the pump go down. You'll see groceries slide down. And speaking of groceries, now we've got this crazy battle between Amazon and Walmart. Walmart is dropping $2 billion now to compete with Amazon. Amazon is getting their third-party vendors to lower their prices by 15%. They're kicking in subsidization. They're subsidizing it somehow, and they're trying to run Walmart shoppers off. So what Walmart does, and I don't know the specifics too terribly, but Walmart is increasing their prices online heavily and lowering the prices in store. They want people to be in their stores. Why do you suppose that is? The reason is because the statistics show that if you go to Walmart store to buy one thing, you may buy a whole shopping cart full. If you go to their website to buy one thing, you may buy two or three. So they know that when you go in store, you spend far, far more money than you would have if you'd have shopped online. So I've got this list of all these popular all-time stories. Here's one. Is college worth the money and debt? The cost of college has increased by 11 times since 1980, while inflation overall has increased 3 times, diluting education with for-profits and saddling millions with debt. And then they go on. I already know the answer. You want to know the answer? A college degree is a lie. Realize it. Just know it. It's a lie. It's a scam. The money is not worth it. The kids are graduating with astounding amounts of debt. My daughter was telling me that kids live on everything with student loans. She said that, you know, they won't work. We worked our way through college. I mean, we'd get student loans if necessary, but we worked. And these kids are living. They're racking up all this debt. They have no experience with debt at all. It's a shame. They're getting out of these houses. Their parents think, man, if you go to college, you're going to be so successful, because their parents are my age. And their parents are like, well, the people I knew that went to college did a lot better than the people that did not. Well, that is not the case anymore. These kids are coming out with degrees. They're unable to go anywhere or do anything. You have to pretty much be a motivated entrepreneur to succeed out there anymore. So the answer is, I don't think a college degree overall is worth it. You know, the amount of debt the average student's coming out with, the average undergraduate is coming out with $65,000 in debt. The cost of college is becoming a scam. I mean, it's absolutely taking care of taking advantage of children, okay? Home prices haven't risen even close to the level of college since, if you go back to 1980, home prices have gone up, it looks like about three times, which is probably what they're talking about with inflation. The cost of college has gone up, as it says, 11 times. I mean, you're not even getting an asset. Your degree can be an asset if you've got kids or grandkids that are struggling with this decision. Man, I don't know. You got to make that as a family choice. But I'll tell you, it's definitely not what it used to be. 96% of college graduates that get jobs are taking jobs that would not have required a college degree. I really feel for those people in this era. I thank you for the Lord blessing us with a business and whatnot. But I'll tell you what, I feel for those people. So anyway, I was just kind of bouncing through some articles. I don't mean to bore you to death. If you guys saw my recording studio, anyway, it's stacked with so much stuff I never get to. It's crazy. So anyway, they've got all kinds of stuff there. So let's talk about some other things that are going on. Another thing I think that's really been hot on my heart right now, folks, is gun control, okay? We've got the Second Amendment. We all know that. We know why it's there. We have behind-the-scenes people actively involved in continuously trying to strip us of our right to bear arms. I personally believe that some of the concealed weapons permits in cities are out of line. They're denying people reasons to bear arms. You know, there's some interesting things, and I believe that you have the right to keep and bear arms. I don't think you should have to have a whole bunch of special permission to do so. I think it's okay to provide concealed permits and have training or whatever, but you can't deny a person the right to keep and bear arms. You can say, okay, you can't conceal this weapon without a special permit for the safety of others until you've proven yourself. That's great. In which case they should be doing that more often and letting more people carry. But in basic, what's going on with this stuff is they've got so much. We just had the shooting in Texas at the church. Let me tell you, I want you to think about something. What seems to dictate the duration of these mass shooting attacks? Think about it. What dictates the duration of a mass shooting? What dictates the duration of a mass shooting, folks, is the arrival of another gun, okay? The sooner that another gun arrives on the scene, the sooner these shootings go away or end. It's simple fact. I don't care if you look at the shooting of the senators in the D.C. baseball park. it doesn't matter, even with the Mandalay shooter or the Yin Yang that broke out of the mental hospital and then went and shot up a church, and the Air Force dropped the ball getting the information that the guy had been court-martialed. Not only had the guy abused his wife, okay, he had cracked the skull of his stepson. Think about that. He went to a mental institution, broke out, and now he's involved in a mass shooting. Again, another man who's not all healthy. Okay, this is the case. Now, SSRI, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, antidepressants, involved in, as far as I know, the numbers I can find, involved in near every shooting, every mass shooting, every murder-suicide, SSRIs are in the middle of it. It's there all the time. So we're creating a drugged-out society. We've got the drug war going all the time. We've got the opioid epidemic, and yet the amount of damage to this nation from alcohol far supersedes anything opioids could ever imagine. We've got everybody on antidepressants. We're messing with their serotonin, which is their feel-good chemical that God gave us to feel okay. Everybody's got a little different quantity, a little bit of a different release method. Some dump a lot and have pauses. Some dump continuously. Some have low amounts of serotonin. And each one gets affected differently by the medication. You've got run-of-the-mill, over-the-counter doctors prescribing these things, general practitioners that are supposed to be monitoring and following up. The problem is, any more to monitor and follow up, boy, you got to have an appointment. And the gal can't ever get you on the appointment book, can she? Unless you want the 6:30 in the morning appointment. Well, people get on these and they don't get back in, and it's too long and before they do, and then that's where a lot of these things are happening. We always give the medical system a pass in our nation. We're not providing any solutions for this supposed opioid epidemic, which is driving me nuts. I don't like it because statistics are being skewed. They're including every death from any kind of medication, even, and if there was opioids involved, they're including that as the primary form of death when calculating statistics. And it's all fractionally destructive relative to alcohol. It's because alcohol is a white Judeo-Christian drug. I mean, this is why it is. The problem is they're not finding that opioids are ineffective. They're replacing them with far more destructive drugs. There are 17,000 deaths in America per year. Listen to this. From NSAIDs. What's an NSAID? Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. It's Aleve or Advil that you buy over the counter. When you go buy your Aleve, realize 17,000 Americans die from that stuff every year, and 10 times that have chronic near-fatal hospitalizations. So 170,000 people per year are getting chronic hospitalizations from all these non-steroidal anti-inflammatory pain meds. Nowhere near the real numbers on the opioid epidemic. The opioid epidemic has taken over the streets. Like, you know, they're calling heroin an opioid. Well, it is, okay? But it's not a prescription medication. I don't want to get too into that. I've got friends in law enforcement. They see the problem side of it. Of course, they're not seeing all the normal people that are in that base, but it's just, these are things that matter. As a Christian, drugs are bad. We know that. We know that drugs destroy lives. In fact, we've seen people just destroy their lives. So telling you that the drug war is a problem doesn't mean that I'm saying drugs are good or that I disagree with the hatred of them. And we all want to do something, but the drug war doesn't work. The more we throw in, the more bigger the mess. I've got friends in the DEA. We spend so much money to get a pound of meth bust in Spokane, you know, and it doesn't even dent the street. It doesn't even affect the flow of drugs here. Nothing. It has no impact. And we spend, you know, tens or of millions of dollars a year, every year, chasing this stuff down. I'm not saying we should let it thrive, but I'm just telling you the system is broken. There's got to be better ways. So my point, as I bounce around on the gun control thing, is the fact that the duration of a gun attack is dependent upon the arrival of another gun. Okay? Rand Paul, this is just it's been about a week now. Rand Paul got attacked by his neighbor. He got tackled from the back while he was riding a riding lawnmower from some crazy guy, and I think it's Paul Ruche. He got put in the hospital, 5 broken ribs. I think he had a fractured skull and some other stuff. And the guy got 4th degree misdemeanor assault for attacking a sitting senator from the back while the senator was not looking. Is that how we should be taking care of our sitting senators? I don't think so. I think that guy should have been charged with much more. Another point that's kind of on my nerves is this Trump tax plan. Okay, the Trump tax plan was about 80% of what he said it would be, but it's like, okay, why in the world does the Senate have to take a plan from Trump that was supposed to break, simplify taxpaying into 4 basic categories? They want to stretch that back to 7. The biggest pitch of his tax plan was corporate tax cuts. Yes, that would affect me. But also, that's where the money is. That and the overseas capitalization. Folks, I don't get this stuff. I believe that we've been so infiltrated by Keynesian economics. I really believe it. That we are never going to get out of it. I know it, okay? There's so many people in power that don't even understand what is wrong with this country economically. They get fed a bunch of numbers, you know, unemployment's down and such is up, and it doesn't even matter. They don't even know what real inflation is versus fake. They don't even have a clue. And they get opportunities to do the top-down trickle effect where you slash the taxes of corporations and you incentivize all these trillions and trillions of overseas dollars to come back to the United States in a one-time window and infuse all that capital back into our economy. Folks, you know, the Senate's destroying this. I mean, our politicians, look at what we've done. We've got a conservative-controlled Senate, conservative-controlled House, and a conservative-controlled presidential executive branch, and we're getting a lot of resistance in a lot of games. Politicians are not good. I mean, I'm sure that's a shocker to you, to find out politicians are bad. These are just notes I took. I haven't been on the air for a few days. Hindsight investing, I wrote about to myself. I get this a lot. I get people saying, I wish I would have, could have done this, done that. You can forget about it, folks. It's deceptive. You do not do hindsight investing. I mean, you can't sit and look back and say, well, if I'd have bought stock this day and sold it that day and bought gold this day, sold that day, sold silver this day, it doesn't work like that. When you're in the middle of the storm or the middle of the market, you can't make those decisions. In hindsight, you can always look back and say, oh, that would have been neat. But don't appeal to yourself this way, folks. Just do not do it. It's not real. It's deceptive. Do the right thing today. Okay, that's the important thing. You just do what you know is right. I talked recently about, you know, different things that have gone on here with brokers. I've got what's going on in the stock market is registering this major, major peak. This Robert Prechter, the VIX index, the volatility index. He said the people are betting the market's never, ever dropping again. That's how it's all long contracts. And wow, that means we've got a record bear market that lies ahead. I think that the precious metals are staying very strong, very, very positive. And I think it's obvious. I think the writing's on the wall where we're going. And I think we're getting back to the good old days. Folks, one other thing. I'm going to tell you this. It bothers the heck out of me. This Mandalay Bay shooting thing. I mean, give me a break, folks. We've got the CEO of the MGM Mandalay sells all of his stock off like within a week or two before. And other leadership. We've got no record of the gun purchases of any of the assault rifles of this guy. We've got, the guy supposedly committed suicide by shooting himself in the chest. His house was supposedly broken into before the FBI got there, so that they have no record of what evidence was there or not. I believe someone planted the guns. We've got no documentation at all of his desire to do this. They've got no record of him searching websites relating to this. They confiscated his hard drive from his home, but coincidentally, they lost the hard drive. I think that's because not only was there nothing on there, there may have been something that would have exonerated him from this. His girlfriend said she knew nothing about it. They believe her. And on the investigation's terrible. There's a main property next door where the shooting took place. They have perfect video footage of all of it, and the police have never come to gather that. He had the room at the end of a wing that an ex-employee, maintenance manager, clearly states was what he called the utility shaft, allowing somebody to easily rappel in and out of that room by just going through a vent in the wall or something like that. So, and this all comes right after Obama goes, well, right after George Soros comes out with $18 billion, $940 million a year dedicated to the open society, and his number two goal is gun control. And there's quotes that they wanted. They basically kept predicting a white domestic terrorist would take off with no political ties, no religious affiliations, nothing. And this, I believe, as extreme as it sounds, there's a high likelihood this is the case. That maybe this is a faked scenario designed to take our guns away. In addition, you've got Army Rangers, multiples, that have viewed the videos, and they say unquestionably not a bump stock, but for positive, an M240, Mini 240, bipod mountable machine gun with a belt feed, which was not found in the room. The AK-47s and things like that do not have a sound anywhere near this gun. The caliber of bullets found don't match guns in the room, and on this thing goes. No one will speak. No one talks. Mandalay supposedly doesn't have any video of the hallway or any other record of this or that. The security guard who supposedly got shot was at best grazed in the calf. He's the one that said shots fired or whatever he said, but he did not announce the location, alluding to the fact that he was at another location. He didn't give him any directions or anything. So he essentially created a situation where everybody stopped moving because they weren't sure who was where or what was what. In addition to this, this security guard, who'd only been there 3 weeks or so, 3 or 4 weeks or whatever it was, before Trump got there, Trump got there after the shooting, before the shooting, he doesn't, you know, there's just a shortage of records on absolutely everything. The security guard used a fake social security number to get the job, and the security guard came and went once to Mexico and then left a second time permanently. He's gone, no longer interviewable. He's gone. He got his job with a fake social security card. I mean, this is what we're up against, folks. This is, in my opinion, a classic conspiracy. Then you've got all these radio stations, or radio, social networks that refuse to cover anything. YouTube, Facebook, everybody. They're shutting it down. So there's a problem there. We are moving into the new society, folks. We really are. Moving fast. I believe the Bible's very clear. You do need to prepare yourself. Just be wise. We're living sci-fi time. We're there. So just be prepared. We're going to be tracked everywhere you go. They're getting all kinds of different technology for that. Precious metals-based assets, I'm telling you, it's the way to go. I'm not going to tell you where, but I just got through an incredible security situation with a tremendous amount of gold on me. And it works. There's a way to do it. But, however, give Coins Plus a call, 444-0044, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN or through the website at coinsplus.com. Folks, I highly recommend 401ks, IRAs, whatever you got. This is a primo value time. We've got an incredible inventory. We can really help you build some beautiful long-term holdings. It's a perfect time. So appreciate you tuning in, and we'll be back on Wednesday, but I definitely want to see you guys get your money in the right place. So please call us. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.